The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. Fast approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 19th of July, 2023. A very good morning to you. How you're keeping? I do hope, of course, that you're all keeping very well indeed. It is the 9 till noon show for the next 3 hours. Loads coming up on the programme, as you can imagine. We want your stories, your views, your topics. 086 6025000. That's the WhatsApp line. From outside the Republic, 00353 86 6025000. Give us a call too on the programme, 07491 25000. Caroline and Neve waiting to take your calls. Again, 00353 74 91 25000. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page as well and Instagram, where we have some stuff for you to interact with as part of this program as well. Readers' emails and other bits that might interest you. Always welcome new likes and new shares and what have you. And we're also on Twitter as well. At Highland Radio there. Right, OK, let's go to the front and inside some of the newspapers. The Inish Times lead this morning. The Bombay High Court has ordered that the trial of Vikas Bhagat, accused of the 2017 murder of Bunkrana backpacker Danielle McLaughlin, be expedited. The court directed that the trial conclude within 1 year. And as we heard from Danielle's mother, Andrea, yesterday, how would you describe it? I think she's had a few false dawns, but hopeful and optimistic that, firstly, Bhagat is not granted bail given his criminal history. That was also refused, but also that they follow through on that commitment to have that trial completed within a year and perhaps even before that. We are have our fingers crossed in that regard as well. The Donegal Post this morning: he may not have been the Caped Crusader, but bus driver Keith Anderson became an inadvertent and unlikely hero recently when he was driving the Marley Coaches local link bus from Kilcar to Donegal Town. His quick thinking and calmness as one of his passengers, Stephen Byrne, from Bavan in Kilcar, who took ill, was crucial. It meant Stephen was soon receiving immediate assistance from a local ambulance crew, who then brought the casualty on an emergency trip to Artlegelvin Hospital in Derry in just 45 minutes. And both gentlemen pictured on the front of the paper this morning. Good to see. The Inish Independent this morning: sadness has been expressed following the sudden death of Bunkrana man Jim Quinn, who died following an incident on the R238 road near Burnfoot last Friday evening. Mr. Quinn took ill and became unresponsive while driving, and his passenger had to guide the vehicle to an emergency stop. The vehicle struck a ditch near Tubin School, and passing motorists stopped to provide CPR before paramedics arrived. Jim was taken to Letterkenny Hospital by ambulance, where he sadly died a short time later. His funeral will take place in Cockhill on Wednesday morning. That's this morning. The Finn Valley Voice this morning: with a total budget of $1.5 million during the next 3 years, Letterkenny-based Earn Act Network will work together with Donegal County Council and European institutions to leverage information technology and smart grid infrastructure. The plan is to link multiple small energy systems and separate them in collaboration, operate them in collaboration like a utility-scale power station to balance local electricity demand and production. Interesting story. More on the front of and inside that paper today. On to the Irish Times now. What do you think about this? Your SUV, you might have bought it because you looked at the tax and the tax is relatively low and that was why you bought it. Well, things might be set to change. And there was always this issue as people move from ICE engines, internal combustion engines, to electric, that there would be a drop in revenue. We talked about this on the show 3, 4, 5 years ago. Well, those chickens are coming home to roost, so there is a budget hole now. And how are they going to plug it? Your SUV. And most cars, seemingly now, most cars on the road are SUVs or some variant of them. Well, the Republic may need to introduce higher taxes for larger, heavier cars to help make up for the $1.5 billion in lost revenue per year as motorists switch to electric vehicles, government officials have said. While such a move would have the biggest impact on SUV drivers, congestion charges are also an option to be considered by officials as they grapple with how to replace the tax stream from cars that run on fossil fuels. Fuel's newly published tax strategy group papers also highlight EU proposals for the gradual extension of electricity tax to residential customers as part of possible options for replacing fossil fuel tax revenues. So they're not going to be out of pocket one way or other. Meanwhile, officials are weighing up a VAT cut for home building in a move that could boost supply and reduce house prices. So what do you think about that? Would you like to see more taxes on SUVs? Do you have an issue with the amount of SUVs on the road? I remember there was a time when they started becoming popular that it was, you know, an ongoing joke. You don't need a 4x4 to do a school run. They're not all 4x4s now. Some of them have really quite small petrol engines. But they're coming after your SUV with taxes to plug that 1.5 billion hole created by people switching to electric vehicles. More on house prices now. And the price of new homes is rising three times faster than the increase in the cost of second-hand homes, which is really troubling, particularly in the context of the defective concrete block crisis, because that means replacement of homes is going to keep increasing, it seems. And we need that scheme, with all its flaws that people point out, to adapt to that, to the rising cost of building homes. It just puts people in even more financial pressure. And of course, there's first-time buyers as well who might be able to get some value on the second-hand market. But to build your own house, which used to be the cheap option, that option is becoming more and more expensive. Latest figures from the Central Statistics Office show new home prices were up by 11.5% in the first 3 months of this year compared with the same quarter last year. So again, that's a 10% increase on, say, for instance, rebuilding a defective concrete block home. The contrast with the annual rise in the cost of existing homes of 3.5% at the end of the first quarter. And the pace of new home price rises is picking up. At the end of last year, prices of new homes were up by 10% and by 6.2% in the four quarters up to April last year. Now, too many stats. My mind can't follow that. But the cost of second-hand homes had been rising at a much faster pace until recently, but higher mortgage rates, a jump in the cost of renovation work and higher priced building materials has made it far more expensive to take on an existing dwelling. So as I say, that's concerning for a number of reasons. And look, I can't see the cost of building products going down, and there's going to be more and more demand, at least in this area, for new builds. So the only way those prices seemingly for new builds, the only way the prices are going to go is up, isn't it? Into the Irish Daily Mail now, and fubbing. Do you know what fubbing is? It's snubbing your partner by constantly being on your phone. Is that something that happens in your house, or is it just generally accepted? Well, instead of, you know, you say, how are you getting on? Nothing. How are you getting on? Oh, I'm fine. What were you saying? That's because they've got the head in the phone. It's called fubbing. Well, we're often told that we're too attached to our mobile phones, and now researchers have warned that it could be damaging our love lives. A study conducted into the effects of fubbing, snubbing others for your phone, found that married couples who engage in the practice have lower levels of satisfaction in their relationship. The team of scientists at Nij Omer University in Turkey said that the phenomenon was widely observed everywhere in today's technologically advanced societies. The researchers explained when individuals perceive that their romantic partners are fubbing more frequently, they feel more conflict and less intimacy in the relationship. Do you believe your phone is coming between you? And if it wasn't there, things would be better. 086 60 25,000, but not if your partner's beside you. I don't want to cause any rows. But yeah, banning phones when you're watching a TV show or a film, maybe is that the way to do it? Any suggestions to 086 60 25,000? Well, it's while you're watching TV often, and the TV licence fee should be scrapped to help restore trust in RTE with the massive drop-off in payments described as a major wake-up call. This is The Sun. New data shows the recent RTE scandal has cost the national broadcaster nearly €1 million in lost TV licence revenue already. Almost 6,000 fewer households have made the €160 payment since the crisis began last month. But now RTE boss Kevin Backhurst yesterday thanked people who continued to pony up the cash. He said, I'm very grateful to those who have continued to buy a TV license during a period when events have cast a dark shadow over RTE. They have every right to feel let down, and we are working hard to rebuild trust. Well, yesterday, politicians said the government should consider binning the annual charge and replacing it with direct funding. Former Minister for Communications Richard Bruton said that straightforward exchequer funding might be more palatable for people. He said the fall in licence fees was a very worrying trend. OK, well, that's a bit of a seismic shift as to the direction of traffic in the past. Get rid of the licence altogether and you will pay for it because it comes out of funding, tax funding. But maybe there'd be more accountability? I don't know. Do you remember that story of the two men who allegedly attempted to steal a man's pension and attempted deception at a post office? It was all over the news, of course, and across social media. Well, two men have pleaded not guilty to attempting to steal a man's pension and attempted deception at a post office. The alleged incident occurred at Hosey's post office on the Stapletown Road in Carlow on January 21st last year. Declan Hotney, 41, of Politon Road in Carlow, and 37-year-old Gareth Corkley of John Sweeney Park in Carlow were accused of attempted deception and attempted theft of a 246-year-old pension belonging to Padder Doyle. Yesterday, both men appeared before Carlow Circuit Court at a jury of 9 men and 3 women as they were sworn in for a trial that's expected to last 6 or 7 days. The court heard that Hockney stands accused of one count of attempted deception contrary to common law, where it is alleged that he attempted to deceive Margaret O'Toole of Hosey's Point Post Office on the Stapletown Road in Carlow on January 21st. So you might remember at the time, I don't want to go into it because it's not in the paper and I don't want to compromise that trial, but you might remember what was going on at that time. So when you go into a restaurant, do you order what you really, really want? Or do you sort of maybe order something because you want to be a people pleaser for those around you? Well, apparently that's what an awful lot of people do with steak. It's in the Irish Daily Star today. People prefer their steak to be cooked in a different way to how they order when in public, suggesting their orders may be for show. When shown a piece of a series of images of steaks cooked from rare to well done, 58% of participants who order medium rare or rare when in public choose differently. So I think, is there a pressure to sort of go, yeah, I'll have it medium rare or rare, so that, you know, you're seen to be, not someone, I'll burn it. And I mean, how many people are out there eating steaks and they're expensive, not the way that they want them? Because the majority of people who were shown images actually wanted it well done. But instead, in the restaurant setting, they order rare or medium rare. So do you do that? Do you eat your expensive steak? Do you eat it not the way you like it? Because in some way, in public, you feel a little bit of pressure. 086 60 25,000. Any other examples of that? That you do things in public to please others, but it's not really what you want to do? Get it off your chest with us today here in the 9 till noon show. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Now, we welcome back onto the programme Councillor Jerry McMonagle, who is Chair of the Joint Policing Committee. Jerry, thanks for rejoining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, and yes, of course. Sorry, Jerry. And we invited you back on because we did speak to you previously about a perception or a concern that we are seeing an increase in serious violent assaults in the Letterkenny area. You were quick to point out that there's been a couple of high-profile situations as of late, and Gardaí are continuing to investigate and make progress in relation to those investigations. But you did raise this this issue recently as it relates to perhaps the installation of more CCTV. The background to that call.
Yeah. We have, for a number of years now, in conjunction with the Chamber of Commerce, been seeking further extension of the CCTV that we already have in the town. And just last November, it moved on, and we got a report yesterday at our MD meeting that it's now sitting on the desk of the Commissioner. And I think it's a very timely time for that to be happening. I think CCTV would help the Gardaí in their investigations, but also would act as a deterrent in preventing crimes, and especially those sort of very serious crimes that have been happening in recent weeks and months in and around Letterkenny. So, look, it's the system we have there now is quite effective. It's good, but it needs to be, there's a lot of gaps in it, and it needs to be extended on. And as I say, it's been maybe four years or more we've been trying to push this through with the JPC and the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, and I remember covering this story and funding being allocated for the rolling out of further CCTV in Letterkenny. So that funding seemingly is there. What's the holdup then in terms of providing it?
Well, any CCTV has to get the permission of the Commissioner of the Garda. So, as I say, it's now went through all the different processes, and it's now at on the desk. We were told yesterday of the Commissioner Drew Harris. It's also there's an application also in for Balbafaith Tranorla area. But look, with the recent events that happened here, the sort of the lack of resources that the Gardaí have, we certainly need something like an extension of the CCTV to reassure people that they can be safe, that their streets are being monitored and can act as a deterrent, but also as a help to Gardaí in their investigations and trying to bring prosecutions.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. This would be CCTV that is monitored, so if an incident was spotted or a potential incident might arise, that someone is watching it and can alert the Gardaí to respond to that scene?
Well, at the moment, we don't have someone where it's monitored 24/7. But what there's a leg of it that goes to the Garda station, and they have it on a multiple screen within the Garda station. It's there to be seen, and all the cameras are there. And what we don't have is someone to monitor 24/7. The Gardaí are not the data protectors. That's the Donegal County Council. And there's certain rules and regulations around the operation of CCTV. But the Gardaí do have access to the cameras as they are relaying it, the live photographs, we'll say. But they actually manoeuvre and the cameras.
So they're really there for identification purposes, maybe prosecution purposes. They're not actually there as a preventative measure other than people knowing them there. In other words, we don't have the ability to react to an incident on Letterkenny Main Street, for an example, because no one is watching the monitor.
That would be correct, Greg. It would be wrong to say that it's anything different to that. But that's something maybe that could change in the future. But as you say, it's the deterrent value of it and the reassurance it gives people that the cameras are there, they do record, and if an incident happens and it has to be followed up on, then that information will be readily available.
Before I let you go, you also were commenting on e-scooters, e-bikes. Yeah. Obviously, you would know, or you may not know, but you could probably imagine that we get regular calls on this program, them flying up and down the streets, on the footpaths, wrong way up main streets, and it's not just a Letterkenny thing. We're seeing more and more of them all around the place. Currently, they're not legal. I think it's some Section 12 of the Road Traffic Act has to be signed into law later this year. Then there's going to be two categories under 25 kilometres per hour. They're effectively push bikes over 25. Then they require tax insurance, roadworthiness, or whatever it might be. But we still don't really know how all that's going to work, be it now, whilst they are effectively illegal, or post the legality of these vehicles. What's your concerns?
Yeah, look, I see it for myself, but a lot of people have been talking to me also about it and brings to my attention. And while I'm fully in support of these type of modes of transport, I think they're the way to go. But we need to provide the proper infrastructure to support their use. At the minute, they're being used widely on footpaths and then crisscrossing on and off the road when it suits the user. And this is causing problems, not just for motorists, but particularly for pedestrians and elderly people and people with disabilities in particular, because they're very silent and they're on top of you before you know it. And so, look...
Well, the problem it's not illegal to cycle or scoot on a footpath. So what? How do you deter people from doing it? I mean, my understanding is you potentially could take against a case against someone under civil law, like it would be trespassing. But in terms of actual rules of the road or the laws of the land, it's not illegal currently to cycle or scoot on a footpath. So are there any tools available to the local authority to introduce something that could be policed?
Well, I mean, we were talking about initial discussion around as would bylaws help? And this is for the protection of the user as well, because if they do collide with someone on the footpath, then I would imagine if someone is hurt, that there will be proceedings of some kind. And you have to prove that you weren't reckless. You have to prove that you were working within the remit. And that's just why the regulations need to be brought in fairly quickly, so that the user does know what he or she can or can't do, and on what's their responsibilities. You know, they go at a fair speed. Very few of them wear helmets. You know, can they drive on the footpath at 25 kilometres an hour? You know, these are all things that we need to be looking at. And while the council have a responsibility, and we're doing it through our active travel works that we've been working on, is we need to put in place the infrastructure where they have their own lanes with on footpaths or at the side of roads where they can, it's only they can use, and it's done safely.
All right, listen, thanks for your time on both topics there. Any views on that? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. That was Councillor Jay McMonagle, who is chair of the Joint Policing Committee. Right, okay. You may have seen the coverage yesterday or heard the coverage on this programme that Ireland has or is becoming warmer and wetter over the last 30 years. Mary Curley is Metairn climatologist and project lead. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am doing fine. And I thought it quite interesting, a lot of the coverage yesterday, like this wasn't front page news to start off with. I'm not sure if you believed it would merit that space. But it was like, you know, we are wetter and less, you know, the angle a lot of papers took was it's wetter, but the good thing is it's sunnier. And I was like, it was like that film, was it Don't Look Up? You know, as if it's not all bad news, like the penny's still not fully dropping here, I don't think, Mary.
Yeah, well, actually, there is a bit of good news in it. It has got wetter. And actually, in like the information we were giving out yesterday, it was for the whole country, whereas for Donegal, it's a little bit higher. It's about 8% wetter annually. But the good news is it has got sunnier, and that's because there's less pollution in the air, which is that our air has got cleaner. So the IPCC, there's an intergovernmental panel on climate change. In their latest assessment, they looked at, because around the world it's got more sunny, and it's basically that there's less particulates in the air from air pollution. From the 1950s up to about the 1980s, pollution in the atmosphere was increasing. And then there was much more stringent laws came in the 1980s. And since then, there's less particles in the air stopping the sun from being blocked, and means our air has got clean as well. And we can see that. We can see it gradually that it has increased.
Right, so how significant is it over a 30-year period that we here in Donegal are, it's 8% more rain, so it's actually the quantity of rain or how many days it rains. So what is the measurement there, and how significant is it to see that big a change over the course of three decades?
Yeah, so what we're measuring here is total rainfall, so it's not the number of days. For the country as a whole, we get about 60% of the time we have a little bit of rain, just very small amounts, like 0.2, so like tiny bit of drizzle. So you'd get that during the year. But overall, like, it is quite significant. You know, the one thing is we know that if we have an increase of 1 degree can hold 7% more water. So that's kind of what we're seeing. You know, we've nearly got in Donegal, you know, you've got a 0.7 degree increase in temperature, and you're seeing a 7% increase in rainfall annually. So it kind of all fits in together that that's the way we're going. And climate projections are suggesting that it will get annually warmer and wetter, you know. But what we're going to see is more extreme events, so more kind of heavy rainfall events they're projecting, and more droughts as well. So it's kind of not that continuous rain, but more, you know, you can have a big heavy downpour, but then it could be a while where you've got a drought, and then heat waves as well, I guess.
And what we're seeing is that the prediction's coming to pass. So what we were being told may happen with the climate is actually happening. We are seeing the temperatures increasing. We are seeing more rain, and then we are seeing perhaps more periods of prolonged dry weather.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, when I looked at the figures first, you know, you always hear about climate change, and obviously I work with it all the time, but it's actually when you see the figures, you know, when I actually did the calculations and it's there right in front of you in black and white, it's quite stark to see how much it has changed. And the way I was kind of also thinking about it was, I have a daughter, like, so I was born, give my age away now, I was born in the late 60s. And so I kind of grew up in the first period, you know, where we had this less rainfall, cooler. So, and then I have a daughter and she's grown up now where she was born in just in 2001. So she's lived through this period. And you're just thinking going forward, you know, if we don't make the changes and we don't adapt and mitigate for climate change, what will the next generation, you know, be facing?
And what we can see as well, Mary, is, and as you say, you know, it doesn't necessarily fall equally over 365 days, is the pressures on how we deal with flooding. And we've seen significant flooding events more recently, and it's the frequency of it. It's not that it's never happened before, but it's more. And I'll be honest with you, there's a few towns around Donegal and some very big towns that aren't really, I don't think, designed to deal with the weather of the future already. Lots and lots of, with these heavy downpours, we get lots of flooding, lots of water gathering, and it seems the infrastructures, which was probably designed for 10% less rain, is not able to actually to accommodate it. So it is the one-off major downfall events that we are going to see more of potentially as well. And you know, that's how people feel the climate crisis.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we can see it now in Europe, the extreme heats they're suffering at the moment. I mean, we've had last summer, we had in Dublin, we had a record-breaking temperature of 33 degrees. But that's the temperature in some of those countries that it was falling to at night. You know, so they're very extreme heats. And we're going to, I mean, we're used to a cooler climate, but we will get more of those heat waves as well. So for MetEireann, and what our aim is to do, we look at the past weather, the present weather, and the future weather. And we use these to inform the policymakers of what to expect with regard. So in the hope that we can better adapt and mitigate to the climate we're seeing as it changes.
Do you think it's becoming more difficult to deny what's happening? You know, I do note on Twitter, and we'll probably get texts here, and that's fine. People are entitled to their opinions, that this is scaremongering, that there's an agenda here, that, you know, we've had ice ages, we've had tropical ages, and this is all par for the course. I would be surprised if there was a period in history where we saw such dramatic change over the course of 30 years. So in other words, someone who was born 30 years ago and they're a 30-year-old now, they are living in the Northwest in a very different climate. Like, it is significant. When you talk about 5% more sunshine, you know, 8% more rain, these are significant changes. When people talk about the changes of, you know, from one era to another, you could be spanning hundreds of thousands or millions of years.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, just when we look at it from the IPCC have stated that it's human activities are causing these changes at this stage. And I mean, in the last 20 years, we've seen much more of these events occurring, and the likelihood of these events occurring can be attributed in part to, anthropogenic effects. You know, so yeah.
I understand where people come from in terms of the weather and maybe confusing the weather with climate. And someone, and I appreciate their time, has sent me a picture of a sign outside a chemist in Buncrana in 2013. And the sign reads 36 degrees Celsius. And their comment is, "Good morning, Greg. I took this photo back in 2013 in Buncrana 10 years ago, 36 degrees, no word of global warming then." That's the weather. Yes, we're talking about the climate.
And the other thing is, you'll see that our temperatures are lower than that. Like, so we'll have a record temperature of, say, 33 degrees. That's roughly the highest in Ireland we've ever had. But when we're measuring our temperatures, they're in special enclosures. They're all at the same height. The thermometers are calibrated, etc. So, you know, so you might see that our records are a bit lower than...
Yeah, but to the wider point they're pointing to, there was one hot day in the 2013, so nothing new here.
Well, that's the thing. We're always going to get variability in our climate. So like last summer, we were basking in a heat wave. You know, we had the really high temperatures. Yesterday, it was lashing rain for most of the day, and that's the weather. So that's why we look at over 30 years, because it's to smooth out those variations. So, you know, it's not looking at the extremes, it's looking at what's happening gradually over time. So you're seeing it an average over 30 years, and it gets rid of those little variations. And that's what's most stark about it all. You're seeing that on those periods, you know, that it's the 0.7 degrees.
Yeah, and maybe the penny will drop when, you know, if it's a farmer that all of a sudden they realise that the land can't be worked the way it was once worked, or if someone can no longer get house insurance because of the way the weather changes and the frequency of events, that they now find themselves in a flood zone potentially. Maybe it's those type of things that then the penny drops with people and they go, oh, right, okay, now this is actually impacting me. Maybe it is a thing.
Yes. And I think if you go to our website, if people are interested, met.ie, there's a summary report on that. And they can find maps of the country. So they'll be able to look at it and see what it's like in their area, to see what it is in the last 30 years. So what to kind of expect each month now. And then we also have a translate page on our met.ie site, and you can see what to expect in the future. So we have those projects there now. And if people want to look at them, they'll see what to expect and what can be expected.
Oh, okay, very finally then. So what are the headlines for Donegal? It is wetter, 8-odd% wetter. It is warmer. What else? Do you have that in front of you, Mary?
Yeah, I mean, we do see changes. I mean, yesterday we were talking about the changes across the, you know, Ireland as a whole. So it was kind of over the whole of the country. They're a little bit different in Donegal. So, for example, on the annual scale, we see 7% across the whole country. But in Donegal, that's 8%. But we also see that February is actually the highest increase in Donegal, closely followed by July, which is kind of, it was July when you look at the whole scale. So there are little variations, but if people want to go, say, look at the map to see them all, they're all there in front.
Okay, listen, thank you for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. Mary Curley, Metairn climatologist and project lead. As I say, all views welcome. 086 60 25,000. What do you have to say? Our next guest is Dr. Sarah Robinson, psychologist and senior postdoctoral researcher with LIRO. Good morning to you, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Greg.
All right. The question being posed is, will artificial intelligence, AI, end civilization? What is AI? Because it comes in waves of you know, of people's attentions. But all the while, even though we don't talk about it all the time, it is progressing at an unbelievable rate. I've seen someone make an analogy of it being like when mobile phones started to come to market, and it was all iPhone, really, the next gen. But this is like, you know, thousands of Apples working on sort of really groundbreaking technology. But how do you see it, Sarah?
Essentially, when we talk about AI, we're talking about artificial intelligence, which really is the ability of a system to identify, to make inferences, to learn, to interpret from data, to achieve pre-identified either organization or social goals. So for example, if you're applying for a mortgage or for insurance, often it's an AI system which will identify whether you're a good candidate or not. But increasingly, it's based on machine learning. So it's based on billions of pieces of data now that have largely been trawled from the internet. So these natural language processing models that we're seeing at the moment, like ChatGPT, have been trained on all of that data.
If the program is scraping from Twitter, for an example, it will be scraping prejudices, certain attitudes potentially.
Absolutely, Greg. So this is one of the core, I guess, concerns about AI systems is that, you know, based on the quality of the data that they're trained on, they will inherit whatever is in that data. So you're absolutely right. If there are problems in that data, then those problems will be reified in the system. But what I'm interested in, I guess, is what the public are making sense of all of this debate. I think we started off our conversation talking about that very extreme perspective that AI might lead to the end of civilization. But I think we've now come to kind of more pressing, urgent, maybe contemporary issues like discrimination. So as a researcher, I'm really interested in understanding what the public think, what they're concerned about in terms of AI, but also software more broadly. So AI is a form of software, but software, which is the area that I research in, really shapes our lives, you know, from morning to night in all sorts of ways. We use, for example, our smartphones, social media platforms. We're talking now on a form of software via Zoom. We use it if, you know, if you work in clerical work, you might use databases and spreadsheets. We might have a smart TV at home or Internet of Things. So software in general, including AI, but not limited to it, influences our lives in all sorts of ways.
I think the difference is at the moment is say, for instance, if someone has a smartphone, and I'll obviously want to give you plenty of time to tell us what you're interested in, how people can help. But if you use smart speakers at the moment, they are a tool at your assistance. So you can say, hey, whatever it is, you know, play that radio station or open those blinds or switch those lights or turn that on, off or on. And it works for us. The problem is with AI going forward is this is a, I don't know if an entity is the right word, but we'll have to share the space with, if you know what I mean, because it will be backwards and forwards in a more natural way, making decisions if we permit on our behalf potentially. So do we not need a further understanding of the potential of AI before we can really sort of say as a public what we fear or what we expect or what we think about it?
Well, that's what I'm really interested in understanding, Greg. So nobody yet has kind of asked the public that. And I think over the last few months, we've seen a lot of debate about AI at quite a high level. You know, people like Elon Musk or Steve Wozniak, one of the co-founders of Apple, who are, you know, very vested stakeholders in this debate and process. Having a very high level debate. For example, there were two letters in recent months which were quite extremist, actually, in terms of the position maybe and the fears that they have around AI. But no one is really engaging with the public and asking them, what do you think? And, you know, software is increasingly a public good, or should be. And I think it cannot fully become a public good without consultation with the public. So what we're trying to do is ask the public what they think. What are they concerned about? You know, absolutely, you're right. AI and software is often a tool for us. You know, we have evolved as a species because of all of the tools that we've developed. And, you know, potentially AI can be another tool for us.
I think too, though,
when it becomes something else, then absolutely that's a problem. So if there is this trade-off between what society can benefit from these tools and what harms will actually come from
them. And is there any questioning as to who might control it? Because we talked about how it might scrape certain ideologies or biases or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you know, we hope there's a level of control on this. And it's going to be incredibly, incredibly powerful. Who will control AI? Will it be free thinking? Will it be right leaning? Will it be left leaning? You know, they're already talking about how they're going to police it. I mean, that's critical. How it's moderated as to how we engage it or how it affects us.
Absolutely. I think that's a core issue that I hear over and over again. And I guess I don't want to answer that today, Greg. What I really want to understand is what the public think. I'm very happy to come back in a number of weeks once we have kind of gathered enough data to understand what is what is the public perspective.
Yeah, and you want the snapshot really without influencing it, and I get that because want it to be raw. You want it to be raw, natural data, because if it is like if it is shoulder shrugging too. That's important information, presumably.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I think at the moment, what the research indicates is that even though all of us, use phones and use software, there is still a really large digital divide in Ireland, in Europe and globally. So there's still many people that actually haven't benefited from the digital transition. Maybe they don't have access to phones or tablets, but maybe even if they do, they don't feel they have the skills or the capacity to use it. And I think there is some research as well that is saying there is a new form of digital divide, which is this idea of algorithmic awareness. So algorithms are these mathematical rules within software, within AI, and that really as a public, we're largely not aware of them, and we don't know how they're shaping the way we interact with each other and the types of news that we receive and read and hear online. And that's, so I think what your question is saying is there another form of divide that we also don't really fully understand the advancements in AI?
Yeah, exactly. Which will be
because of that, are we unable to actually engage in these debates? I would say I want to find that out, mm-hmm. because that's really important information. And if people aren't aware, then I think definitely people like me in academia have a responsibility to try and help and inform the public about that. But at the moment, I guess I'm just trying to understand what that position is.
Okay, so how do people engage with the survey? Where is it?
Thanks, Greg. So I am a researcher with LIRO, which is Science Foundation Ireland's Research Centre for Software. And on the LIRO, L-E-R-O, social media pages, so Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, there is access to a survey. And hopefully if I could share it with Highland Radio as well.
Yeah, of course, we'll share it, yeah.
Put it on your social media too, that would be a good space. But it's a short 10-minute survey. We're asking the public their concerns, priorities about how to make software more responsible, what values they think are important, and really what they feel they can do to kind of create software mm-hmm. for a better world rather okay. than some of the challenges we have at the moment.
Thank you so very much indeed. Dr. Sarah Robinson, psychologist and senior postdoctoral researcher with LIRO. Yeah, we'll link that out for you. I was contacted by a listener to say, hey, Greg, just wondering if anyone else has a problem with their passport being delayed. I recently applied for a first-time passport. I sent all the documentation. So 10 weeks later, they've asked for proof of address. Two letters needed. A photographic ID, i.e. PPS card. Photocopy signed by Garda. And I rang and asked, once they get it, will there be a delay? And was told they'd have to go back to the start of the process again. Has anyone else experienced that? Any way around it? What is their expected delay now once they furnish all those documents? If you can help that listener, 086 60 25,000. Are poor people with old diesel cars subsidising the wealthy so that enable them to buy expensive electric vehicles? Just asking. Listen, the more less well off you are, the worse off you are, because it's if you have an older car, it's more expensive to tax. It's more expensive to insure. If you pay your tax to the government, your road tax every 3 months, it costs you more over the course of the year. Every which way you turn, the less resources you have, the more expensive it is to live. Doesn't make much sense to me. So yes, of course, to some extent you could say that the extra you're paying for driving an older car is helping to subsidise the purchase of electric vehicles. Who has access to the CCTV footage? Who has access to the CCTV footage? Who does the monitoring? Well, no one's monitoring at the moment, which I think is a bit crazy, to be honest with you. Who has access to it? On Garda Síochána as an investigative tool, it seems. Another caller says we need CCTV inside all the pubs as so many drinks are being spiked, which has increased big time. We hear that. We understand that that's what people are saying, but they're not reporting it to the Gardaí. If there is a big increase in the amount of people who are having their drinks spiked, they're not reporting it as a crime, because we got that checked out yesterday and there is no there was a number of cases last year which we discussed on this program, but if people are having their drinks spiked, then they're not telling the Gardaí. So why would that be, I wonder? Morning, Greg. Back in 2009, we were told to buy small cars and get cheap tax, which I did. That didn't last long. Government making fool of us all. Thank you. Okay. Another, my electricity bill for the summer months double what it was even before the war, through the wholesale prices lower than it was before the war. It's not lower than before the war, but I understand what you're saying. It's much lower than its peak. Food, insurance, heating are expensive and they are all making huge profits. And what has this government done to stop this profiteering? Sweet FA, we're not living in this country, we're surviving in it. Their electricity bill, €354, which is kind of low. Do you know what I've come across? A lot of people who were getting estimated bills and recently their electricity provider checked the meter and they were getting bills for like 1,200, 1,500 businesses, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. I haven't mentioned it on air before, but I've been speaking to people or had contact from people. Are you amongst those that recently you got a bill saying, sorry, but we've misrepresented how much electricity you were using and now you owe us this big, massive bill? And the worst is you can't switch provider until you settle that bill. So there are some people out there that are caught every which way. Is that something that you've experienced and want to share and get the message out there? Carbon footprint calculations per person should be introduced. Do people really need to take a trip to New York for Christmas shopping? I don't know. But should you stop doing that when all the world leaders are flying around the world in their private jets with six or seven Humvees in the back? See, that's the problem that some people have. Why should I not go shopping to New York when the people that are telling me not to are flying around in private jets? Our own leader at the moment is away somewhere flying off for a 4 or 5 day visit. All right, let's take a break for the news and obituary notices. We will be right back.